On the field, winning comes from hard work, care, and preparation. I learned that that same hard work doesn't stop when we exit the arena. Your care is our commitment, and preparation is our promise. We tackle challenges head on and turn dreams into reality, which is why I'm excited to join the team at Alcova Mortgage, where we help you score the perfect home.
And welcome into the Who's On Podcast, part of the Saber Podcast Network, presented in part by Joe Reed and Alcova Mortgage. Score your perfect home today. All right, it is the madness, and not just March madness. It's kind of a new type of madness. You got the transfer portal, you got coaching carousel going crazy right now. And to talk about all of it, we got David Teal from the Virginia Pilot. David, how you doing this morning?
What's up, Preston? Imagine being a Maryland fan right about now. You're getting ready to play in the Sweet 16. You don't know if your coach is bailing.
This is the most bizarre thing. And I joked yesterday that Kevin Willard saw Will Wade and decided to sip some of the Will Wade juice and just kind of go off the deep end here. It's been a kind of wild NCAA tournament, but not for really reasons on the court.
Yeah, well, Maryland did produce an on-the-court reason with Derek Queen's buzzer beater. I kind of think he walked. Others don't. It was very much a coin flip call.
I say just don't take it away from us, you know? It was a good shot. It was a good moment.
Yeah. But between Will Wade and Kevin Willard and guys leaving, you know, the day after that they exit the NCAA tournament – and that's what Ryan Odom did. But in stark contrast, he and UVA, you know, as Ryan said at his presser to us on Monday, everyone was very respectful of the other's position and appreciated, you know, kind of the awkwardness of it all. And as Carla Williams said to us, the industry has a serious calendar problem. And the fact that the portal opened on the 24th, which is a week later than last year. I mean, last year, dude, it was the day after Selection Sunday. This year, they backed it off a week, but still, that doesn't keep athletic directors from wanting to get their coach on board. And it just makes for a stone-cold mess, and it's the same in college football. When teams are preparing for the – Penn State was preparing for the playoffs, and its backup quarterback was in the portal. I mean, It is. It's madness to the nth degree.
I did want to talk about the calendar because I know you asked Carla about that at the press conference on Monday to introduce Ryan Odom. Is there a solution? Because like it just seems like there's too much. You're trying to fit like a professional calendar into a school year calendar, mm-hmm. and the two don't coincide. Is there a solution that you kind of think of?
Well, on the basketball side, I don't think it's that difficult. Because you could still back it off a week or so and not interfere with the academic calendar and kids getting to their new destination, because they're not going to get there till the summer or the fall. Football is a little more problematic because people want to get enrolled for the January semester so they can participate in spring practice. And that necessitates that transfer window right smack dab in the middle of postseason because, of course, the playoff is going longer now that it's been expanded. And that's why college football is looking at maybe starting the season in what is now called week zero, pushing championship weekend to Thanksgiving. And the networks don't like that because they like all their games Thanksgiving. It is. It's really messy. And it forced Carla Williams and UVA. I mean, they've been working on this search since October, but they were talking to coaches face to face during their seasons.
Yeah. And I mean, for them, they had a longer runway than most. Some of these other coaching mm-hmm. searches, it's like it's a blitz. And, you know, you do your groundwork beforehand, of course. You have search committees and search firms for that very reason. But it does seem just like a very chaotic into it. And now it's I know this is not what probably the NCAA wants, but, you know, who cares? But, you know, it's taking away from the NCAA tournament. It's taking away from the basketball part of it.
And that's the shame of it. And yes, there haven't been buzzer beaters. And no, we don't have a Princeton or a Yale or a St. Peter's or an Oral Roberts in the Sweet 16. Darn near had Colorado State. But still, some of the basketball has been exceptional and fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it right now in the Sweet 16, you've got, I know it's all power four or five, conference teams, but, it's really solid basketball teams left. So we're going to get some really good games in the Sweet 16. Do you, I don't know who you picked beforehand, but are you still feeling confident about your picks before the tournament?
I am. My final four, Preston, were Houston, Florida, Duke, and Michigan State. And I'll stick with it. I've got Houston cutting down the nets. This is a quintessential Kelvin Sampson defensive, offensive rebounding team. But oh, by the way, unlike his past squads, this one shoots the three well. And you combine those things. And I think the Cougars have a great chance to have a heck of a party in San Antonio, a little home state
Yeah.
celebration on the Riverwalk come April 7.
See, I fell into the story a couple years ago when it was in Houston, and Jim Nantz and the
Oh,
whole story.
yeah.
And so I picked Houston that year and I got burned. So I had them getting out in the I think at the Elite Eight, but we'll
Losing
see.
Auburn, probably.
I have Duke.
Or no, who would Houston have lost to in
Tennessee.
the Tennessee? Okay.
Yep. I had Tennessee kind of in that spot. So all ones and two seeds still, but I had Duke over Florida in the championship game. I guess we'll find out soon. But we did get the first chance to hear from Ryan Odom at his introductory press conference on Monday. A lot of names came back. It was kind of an event. You saw Ralph Sampson, you had Jeff Jones, obviously Wally Walker and Barry Parkhill, who are, in the administration there at UVA. So it was a lot of people just kind of out and about. What'd you kind of initial takeaways from what you heard on Monday?
Well, it was catnip for the UVA faithful, right? All those folks there, and Ryan Odom spinning yarns about moving to Charlottesville in the third grade, and eavesdropping on the timeout huddles of Dean Smith and Lefty and Mike Krzyzewski and Jim Valvano. Just great stuff. And yeah, it was kind of like an old home week. Rich Murray and his wife Sarah were there, the former UVA sports information director. And I was struck, Max Scholga was there, Ryan's
Yeah.
Atlantic 10 Player of the Year at VCU this past season. Now, I think UVA fans have realized by now that he doesn't have any
No.
eligibility left. He's not coming to Charlottesville. But that just speaks volumes about the relationship that Ryan has with Max. And Max was with him originally at Utah State, accompanied him to VCU and led them to the A-10 regular season and tournament championship and into the NCAA bracket this year. And Tony Shaver, his coach and Griff Aldridge's coach at Hampton Sydney way back when. And good to see Tony, former William and Mary coach. So it was an event.
I was going to say, do we need to go back to that Hampton Sydney roster? And, if you need a coach, just go pick one off that team. Because you also have UC Irvine's Russell Turner on
Russell
that team.
Turner.
Like, it's crazy just kind of the coincidence that all these coaches were on that team back then.
It really is. I did a story on the three of them. I think it was season before last, because once again, they were having this great confluence. They had all won more than 20 games. It was Ryan's second year at Utah State. Russ was killing it at Irvine, as he continues to do. And Griff was in the process of getting Longwood back to the NCAA tournament for a second time. Now he's rejoining Ryan as the associate head coach at UVA.
Yeah, let's get into. I kind of picked out five takeaways from the press conference on Monday, and let's start with first kind of the thing that they kept quoting over and over and over again through different questions is being a top 10 program. That's the resources to be a top 10 program, but also the goal of being a top 10 program.
And it's a major commitment. The commitment is to try to be top 10, you know, in the country. And certainly it's going to take the resources in order to do that. I'm not going to give you specifics of numbers and all that, but I know the commitment's there. And you know, ultimately, you know, that is a part of the process of becoming a top 10 program. That is not it. That's not the end all be all. There's a lot of other stuff that goes into, you know, fielding a championship basketball program.
Carla mentioned it. Ryan mentioned it. Even Wally Walker, talking to him, he mentioned it. Everyone is kind of glued on to that fact. Resources wise, NIL wise, revenue sharing wise, what was your takeaway from kind of hearing them talk at that press conference?
It's ambitious. I think rightfully so. You know, when you've hung a national championship banner in the last 6 years, now granted, a lot has changed in 6 years, but they know their donors better than we. And if they believe that the base is all in and wants to invest in the program and do so not on a one-time basis, but consistently, because that's what it's going to take. This house settlement that's coming next month, Preston, is a decade long. It is a 10-year deal, if approved. Now, might there be legal challenges? Isn't there always in college athletics? But I think we all anticipate that there's going to be rev share for at least the next decade. And my guess is Virginia will be in line with the rest of the power conferences and vote about 15% of that rev share to men's basketball. So a little more than 3 million. Then on top of that, you're going to look at what they're now calling real NIL, as opposed to what the current model is, which is totally unregulated. And Carla Williams talked about how, since that is going to be now, in theory, more regulated and monitored by Deloitte, that and with penalties for violating the cap and trying to skirt fair market value, that's good for a school such as Virginia. And that it should, again, in theory, not completely level the playing field, but level it somewhat, certainly more than it is now when the Big Ten and the SEC have all the advantages. And I think we see that in Sweet 16 representation.
I thought it was interesting too, Carla, talking about, you know, they had this long runway, you know, since Tony Bennett retired in October. They said they took kind of the couple months there to reassess kind of where this program is. Where do you think this program is? And I know you weren't there for the reassessment that they were talking about, but just kind of where do you think Virginia is in the larger landscape?
They've had one losing season. It doesn't have to be an extended decline. I mean, look at Michigan. Michigan was 3-17 in the Big Ten last year. Michigan's in the Sweet 16 this year, won the Big Ten tournament. You can do it. And that was with a first-year coach, Dusty May. Now, granted, he's a Final Four coach. He's been there and done it. Look at what Pat Kelsey did at Louisville. Flipped it on a dime with a brand new roster. And Louisville invested. If you invest and you evaluate wisely and then you coach them up, you can win. And the ACC, as we saw all year, is at its weakest point in memory. So it's not like you're going up against Goliath every night. Now, yes, are Duke and Louisville and maybe even Clemson going to be a thorn? And now that Will Wade's at NC State, you know, things are going to change there. But there is no reason, absolutely none, that Virginia cannot return to ACC prominence, and that should equate to national prominence.
And yeah, a lot of people make the joke that, you know, it'll happen in year two for Ryan Odom because that's where it's always happened. But, you know, there is some hope, you know, just to kind of depending on how this year goes in the transfer portal, because it's going to be really heavily reliant on that, because There's, I think at this point right now, seven players in the transfer portal. Some of those guys could come back, but others could leave. And you need some roster turnover because I keep telling people, that overreact to the transfer portal. This is a 15 and 17 team. You don't need all 12, 11 players back from last year's team. You need some roster turnover at this point.
Absolutely. I was going to ask you, I'll ask you this now. There's seven guys in the portal that we know of, right? Obviously, McNeely would be your top priority. If we're playing general manager,
Yeah.
so McNeely is our first priority. Got to get him back, right? Who's your number two priority? Who are you gonna offer the most money to? Kofi Robinson?
It's probably one of those two because I think both are very good stylistic fits with Ryan Odom and the system that he's bringing in. And I think I keep talking about Jacob Kofi. I watched Jack Clark play for VCU last year, and I can't help but think Kofi is a better version of that, a higher potential version of what Jack Clark gave them. So, Kofi would be a fantastic number two guy to get back. But Anthony Robinson, like we saw UNC last year, it is so hard to find a reliable big man in the transfer portal. And the bits and pieces that we got to see of Robinson this year, you like his future going forward of being a guy that can block shots, finish around the rim, and rebound.
Yeah, agreed. And there's a young man at VCU who, and I don't want to butcher his name, but he fits that bill too. He's in the portal. He was a freshman this year. He's from overseas, and he is a uncanny shot blocker. Limited from a basketball skill standpoint, especially on the offensive end, but boy, the timing and the instincts at the rim defensively. He could really be a fit in Charlottesville also.
Yeah, Luke Bamboye. I'll be the one on record to
Okay, Bamboye. All right.
I'll be
Maybe
on
it's
the
not as difficult as I feared.
I may be wrong, but from what I heard on TV, I think that's how some of the other announcers were saying it this March. Yeah, he's certainly a name Virginia fans have had their eyes on. Brandon Jennings, a point guard from the
Point
Richmond
guard.
area, another one.
Right.
I guess you saw more VCU this year because you watched them throughout the season, but what'd you make of his play when he was able to get some limited minutes behind a really veteran backcourt there for VCU?
Yeah, I didn't. I'll be completely honest, Preston. I didn't get a real feel for his game, because as you said, they were so strong and experienced at the guard spot that it was difficult to evaluate Jennings.
Yeah, just to get some minutes though for him as a freshman behind those guys is something. And I remember, I'm from the Richmond area. And, he went to St. Chris. I went to Trinity, so there were rival high schools there. I remember seeing some game tape of him. He's had some really good games. Someone actually pulled up that he had 39 points in a game against St. Anne's Belfield, against a team led by Chance Mallory and Carter
Oh,
Lang,
wow.
if those names ring a bell.
How about
So,
that?
yeah, there would be some competitive history there, for sure, between those guys. We talked about it already, so let's go ahead and skip down to Ryan Odom talking about his style of play, and then also the fit with the current roster. He kind of talked about this in a media scrum afterwards, after his stuff on the podium, and basically saying, like, he's been through this a couple times before. Like, the style of play will translate. These are good basketball players. They can fit in. But if they don't fit in, if it doesn't seem like a fit, they can go.
Confident in that our style of play, will fit these guys. And if it doesn't, and somebody needs to decide to go elsewhere, then that's part of it. And we didn't keep everybody at VCU. There were others that decided to go elsewhere, and some followed Coach Rhodes, to Penn State. Others went elsewhere, and then we began to figure out, okay, who do we have here? Who's committed to this? And then you start to put the pieces together.
He doesn't seem too held up on, keeping this roster intact or keeping a lot of this roster intact.
No, because as you said, he's been through it before. He was at Utah State for 2 seasons before moving to VCU, and then VCU for 2 seasons. So, when he took some guys with him from UMBC to Utah State, and then some guys with him from Utah State to VCU, and certainly will do the same as he moves to Charlottesville. What's interesting is, you look at the metrics for Ryan's teams, they're all over the map. They really are. And Jeff Jones remarked about this, that as Ryan, in Jeff's mind, and Ryan used to work for Jeff at American, that as Ryan has matured as a coach, his greatest development has been on the defensive end. Said he could always coach offense and draw it up. And I think Virginia fans got an eyeful of that in the UMBC game because they shredded Virginia. Now, granted, Virginia had injury issues and such that day. But I remember Ryan told me, we're going to get good shots. It's just a matter of if we make them. And they did that day, and they won by 20. But his VCU teams were more steeped in the defensive end. And they were really, really good on that end of the floor this season. So the trick in Charlottesville will be to mesh those two into a winning combination. He has played faster tempos. He has played very slow tempos. Again, it will all depend on his personnel, and I think that speaks to his flexibility as a coach that he's been able to thrive in both styles.
And I think that's something that's you want in a new coach for Virginia, especially in this modern era where rosters can kind of change season over season. You want adaptability to be able to adjust to, all right, what style of players do we have this year? Where are we finding our offense this year? How aggressive can we be defensively? You mentioned the defense. I think I said this last time you were on the podcast, but VCU is one of 10 teams in the country to be top 35 offense and defensive efficiency this year. And they're fifth in the country in defensive efficiency. So, really strong defensive team, like you said, but they're aggressive. It's a very different defensive style than Virginia is used to. It's not, getting back on defense and settling into that pack line. It is, pressing full court. It's, trying to cause some turnovers, and it's a different style. And the pace of play is interesting because I think any pace is more than what Virginia has been used to. But it has fluctuated over the years. You look at this year, they weren't a particularly fast team this year, but you go back a couple of years ago to Utah State teams and they were, kind of 100th in the country, and they're further up there. So it has changed a lot.
Oh, it absolutely has. And the full court nature of the defense, that speaks to the importance of depth because that wears guys out and gets in their legs. It affects them on the offensive end too when they're trying to shoot and cut. So that effort expended on the defensive end will necessitate depth. So again, that's up to him and his staff to figure all that out as they go about their player acquisition.
Yeah, probably need a little bit deeper than that traditional Tony Bennett 6-7 man postseason rotation.
And that's what Ryan had at VCU this year. You talked about Jennings and how he was able to carve out a subtle role behind a veteran backcourt, but they needed that extra body.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we're going to take a break here, and then we'll get into the rest of kind of the takeaways from this press conference, the coaching staff, general manager talk, and also just some of the reasons behind the hire. I thought were pretty interesting. So we'll get to that here coming up on the Who's On podcast.
On the field, winning comes from hard work, care, and preparation. I learned that that same hard work doesn't stop when we exit the arena. Your care is our commitment and preparation is our promise. We tackle challenges head on and turn dreams into reality, which is why I'm excited to join the team at Alcova Mortgage, where we help you score the perfect home.
Welcome back into the Who's On podcast. I am joined by David Teal today, and we're just going through some of the stuff that we learned from Ryan Odom's introductory press conference and kind of where this new era of UVA basketball is headed. And a big change, and maybe not as big, kind of in front of the scenes is, I asked Ryan Odom about kind of a general manager position. That's something that has been a big revelation in recent years in college basketball. You saw like North Carolina just hire one. Now, UVA has had a general manager, so to speak, for the last season in Wally Walker, who as a deputy AD. And it's interesting. I went back and looked because I did a kind of behind the scenes of their transfer portal for football. And talked about Tyler Jones and his work as the deputy AD and slash general manager for that.
So the general manager position is really key. We essentially have had a general manager for football all year. We just didn't publicize it. So Tyler Jones serves in that role. He did a phenomenal job working with our data analysts, working with our coaches, working with recruits, etc. So Tyler has football. Armani Dawkins, who is the deputy AD for women's basketball, is the GM for women's basketball. So she started that work right now. This year for men's basketball, because of the transition, Wally Walker served in that role. And as most people understand, he was a GM in the NBA. So very, very valuable handoff to the new staff.
All three of these hires, so Tyler Jones with football, Armani Hawkins with women's basketball, and Wally Walker for men's basketball, they're all made in 2023. So it was a concerted effort to kind of get someone with experience like this. So they've had this general manager model for a while, but it seems like Wally Walker's role going forward is helping transition to a new general manager with this new staff.
Yes, a titled general manager,
Yes.
in fact, Preston. And one I think who will likely, just not to get too deep in the weeds, but on the org chart, will report to Carl Williams. Will obviously work quite closely with Ryan and his staff, but will report to the athletic director, which I think speaks to the importance that she places on that job.
Yeah, it's interesting because you've seen different models. Some programs have it report to the head coach, some go to straight to the athletic director. And talking to Wally, he's like, it's not like a traditional professional GM because obviously he would know. He's filled both roles now. He was a GM for over a decade with the Seattle Supersonics, RIP the Seattle Supersonics. But
Right?
I grew up a Ray Allen fan, so I miss those teams. But yeah, so he obviously has that professional experience, but he's also kind of been in this role for the last year. So it was interesting talking to him, getting his thoughts on kind of what the role of a GM is. And he says there's no silver bullet. And he said he's happy to help, bring up to speed whoever they have coming on. And obviously because he's in place already, he's playing a big role in helping put this roster together for next year right now.
Yeah, and it'll be a fascinating hire. My guess is it will be someone who's not on either staff right now. Will it be someone with UVA connections, someone more from the business world, from the NBA world? It's going to be very interesting. And it was the first, you talk about being ahead of the curve on this. Hiring a general manager was like the first thing John Shire did
Yeah.
when he replaced Mike Krzyzewski, brought Rachel Baker in from Nike.
Was she the first one? Because that's the first time I remember really hearing about the position.
I believe she was. I mean, I don't have that documented,
Yeah.
Preston, but like you, she was the first one that came across my radar.
So it'll be interesting just to kind of see how that's filled out. Ricardo Williams said they're looking to finalize the coaching staff and kind of the staff as a whole this week. Still, as of recording, they have not announced that full staff. But let's talk about the coaching staff a little bit now, too. Obviously, we mentioned before, Longwood coach Griff Aldrich is coming on as an associate head coach, a really solid hire there. And Ryan joked that he didn't get enough time with Griff in his first stop. Griff was only there for 2 seasons as his director of ops, right?
Right at UMBC before Griff got the Longwood job.
Yeah, and obviously Griff has done great stuff at Longwood, got them to the NCAA tournament for the first time in program history. He's been there twice now, as a Someone with some ties to the Longwood program. I know how big that was for that university. So obviously he's meant a lot to that community. And him coming over now, he's a UVA School of Law alum, so a little bit of a connection there. But yeah, just overall, what are your thoughts about Griff Aldridge? You've had some time interaction with him over the years.
Yeah, I have. And comes from the Tony Shaver coaching tree. Incredible backstory. I mean, he was all set to join Dave Odom at Wake Forest as a GA after he got out of Hampton Sydney, but then he got into UVA Law School. And Dave Odom told him, "Nope, you can't come here. You're going to law school. And you go to law school, and then if you still want to coach, fine." Well, then Griff didn't coach. Then Griff went to Texas and got a, you know, be became a very successful attorney and businessman, and then started a faith-based youth basketball program in the inner city there. And it's just a fascinating journey that he's been on. And then he dropped it all to go be the ops guy at a low major in Catonsville, Maryland. And as one who grew up in that area, I've been on UMBC's campus. I know how low major it is and had been. And in those 2 years with Ryan, they did great things, and that got him the Longwood job.
It's absolutely a wild story to go from kind of his background outside of basketball, obviously having connections, but to then take this director of ops job for 2 years at UMBC and to parlay that into a head coaching job and just seeing the success that he's had already. What does his experience kind of bring to this coaching staff?
Well, he's sat in the chair.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Who was Tony Bennett's first hire?
This is true.
He went and got a sitting head coach in the state of Virginia who he knew very well in Richie McKay. And what did Ryan Odom do? He went and got a sitting head coach in the state of Virginia whom he knows very well. So having somebody who with head coaching experience is great. And Tony came with far less head coaching experience than Ryan. Ryan's been a head coach for more than 10 years, including half season as Charlotte's interim. Tony had only been a head coach for 3 years at Washington State before Virginia hired him. So, but still, it's not only someone who's been in the chair, Preston, it's someone whom Ryan trusts implicitly. They are so close. And Griff told me the day Ryan's hiring became official, he said, "Look, if Ryan had gone to NC State or Villanova, I wouldn't be going. But UVA, because of the affection he has for this institution, fact that he went to law school there, fact that he's from the state, he's a 757 guy in Norfolk Academy. It really appealed to him, and I to me they're a perfect match."
Yeah, it does seem like the perfect hire, and yeah, the similarities to Tony's arrival at UVA. I actually did the math just because I was curious when Ryan was talking about the story with his phone call with Tony Bennett when Tony was asking about if he had more gray hairs than Ryan Odom. And, Ryan's got a few because he's been coaching for so much longer than when Tony got here. I think Tony was 39 when he got the job at UVA,
Yeah,
and
Ryan's 50.
Ryan's 50, and I think it's like almost 2 decades been coaching longer than when Tony Bennett arrived. So he's had a lot of experience. He's coming in with that. He also talked about, bringing a lot of his VCU staff coming over with him. I know a lot of them were there for that press conference. And then he also mentioned, when he got to VCU, and this is a point that I've been making, is he hired some guys that were VCU alums to come on with and Darius Theus and Bradford Burgess. And he said he wants to do the exact same thing at UVA. Well, obviously that leads you to look at some of the guys that have been in the program and were helping him run that 30-minute workout that they had right before the press conference. And Isaiah Wilkins, Kyle Guy, Chase Coleman. How do you think this coaching staff's going to come together in the end whenever they finally announce it?
I don't know. Mike Curtis, I'm almost certain, will
Yes.
stay as strength
He
coach.
mentioned him several times, and I think from reports that I've heard that his contract is, still runs through, so he's going to probably be back.
Yeah. Whether Guy and Wilkins are back, I'm not so sure. I think some things depend on who is retained at VCU under the new regime now with Phil Martelli Jr., who will be introduced later today, actually in less than an hour, up at the Siegel Center. So I think that's a very fluid situation. If Ryan Odom is looking for more seasoned hands to bring on board with UVA connections, I would look no further than Anthony Solomon or Bryant Stith.
Yeah.
Anthony's been in a lot of different places. Most recently, he's an NBA scout. He's been out of coaching since Mike Bray's regime ended at Notre Dame. And Bryan Stith is down at North Carolina Greensboro. Worked for Jeff Jones at Old Dominion, obviously a storied player in Virginia history. Those would be two people that I know have been recommended to Ryan that he consider.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting just kind of seeing where this coaching staff kind of ends up. And at VCU, Odom only had three full-time assistants. So, as opposed to the five that you can have now, just based off the website. But it'll be interesting to kind of see how this coaching staff gets filled out. And I did want to mention one other thing. We were talking about the general manager earlier, and I forgot to talk about this, but it's something interesting and it's something that has been kind of talked about behind the scenes is the role of data analytics with the roster right now. Wally Walker says they are using an outside firm to do that. And it just helps, there's thousands of players in the transfer portal already just to kind of whittle it down. And we've seen other programs like Alabama and Duke. Some other ones escape my mind right now, but there's been a lot of success with kind of using data analytics with this transfer portal era right now.
There has, and God, when Calipari had it rolling at Kentucky, a friend of mine, Joel Justice, who later became an assistant coach there, he was the analytics guy and did a great job. And Joel's now the associate head coach at Ohio State. So analytics aren't new, but I think applying them to the portal as you evaluate prospects, is kind of a new component of it and a fascinating one.
And let's close on this. Just some of the reasons behind the hire and talking to Carla Williams.
He went through a lot from third grade until 50 years old, and in there was every indicator that he was the person that we could all agree to entrust the program to. I mean, he's a phenomenal coach. He's won at every level as a player, as a coach, Division II, Division I, and he's done it at different places in different circumstances. And we know he loves the University of Virginia, and so that made it easy.
Some of the key takeaways, just Ryan's success in this new era. Obviously he's embraced the transfer portal. You look at VCU's starting lineup from last year, that I think their top five guys in minutes were all transfers. Success in different places. Obviously UMBC, Utah State, and VCU are all vastly different jobs and opportunities. And then the ties to the program. I don't think you could ignore it. Obviously it's not the sole reason. I know some people want to say that it's the sole reason, but it's not. But it does add something to it. And talking to, Ralph Sampson, obviously he was a big fan just because, obviously he remembers, a young Ryan Odom back then. And it kind of brings those eras together. Obviously Tony Bennett did a great job kind of bringing all the eras of UVA basketball together, but it kind of keeps that in place.
It does. And I think whereas Jason Williford kind of served, or not kind of, he did serve in that role for Tony Bennett, and with bringing previous eras together. I think Ryan will do a lot of it himself through sheer force of personality. He's more engaging and outward than Tony. Tony's very insular. He just wanted to coach. He didn't want to deal with you. He didn't want to deal with me. Ryan's different. Ryan's like his daddy. I mean, his daddy, there was nothing he liked more than the day before the ACC tournament started, just sitting in the stands at Greensboro Coliseum, BSing with a bunch of reporters for as long as they'd let him. And Ryan's the same way. He's just a conversationalist and he's social. And I think he will be personally involved in bringing all those different eras together. And I think that will serve him well. And, and he's familiar with the league now, albeit not an 18 team
Yeah,
league,
there's
but
a couple new faces.
just a couple. But he was part of Seth Greenberg's best teams at Virginia Tech. He was on that staff. That 2007 team, when Virginia Tech and Virginia were in the same NCAA tournament pod in Columbus, Ohio. They were in different regions, but they were in the same pod at Ohio State. And both teams advanced in the first round and then lost in the second. But that was Seth's best team, and Ryan was on his staff. So it's not just he's familiar with UVA. He knows the conference.
Yeah. It was interesting clocking Ryan after the press conference. It felt like it was over and he had been taken off somewhere else, and then all of a sudden he reemerges and he's introducing his name to some of the students that were there, some of the cheerleaders that had welcomed him out onto the court, and he's like getting names and everything. And so he seems comes off very personable.
Oh, Preston, I've known him since he was a kid. And I know I'm dating myself, and I don't mean to, I don't say that out of any disrespect or to belittle him in any way. It's just I've known his parents for so long, since Dave was on staff with Coach Holland back in the mid-80s when I came on the scene here in the state. And it's just the way his dad is, it's the way he is. And I think it serves him well as a head coach.
Last thing, and then we're getting out of here, is I posed this question to other people. Just on Monday, just there's a lot of noise coming out of Raleigh right now, because in that there's a lot of good positive vibes in the ACC. I think there's some solid hires made in the coaching circles. Is Ryan Odom, is he capable of kind of holding that spotlight, you think, in the ACC? We talk about all the coaches that we've lost in this conference. Is he capable of kind of carrying that flame, for the ACC going forward?
I think Ryan will be true to himself. He's very personable. They're not going to have any trouble getting him on ACC PM on the network. He'll be glad to do it anytime they ask. Is he Will Wade? No. Should he be Will Wade? No. He should be himself. Will Wade is going to rattle cages, and it works for him. So why not? And it works, Preston, in the environment there at NC State,
Yes,
because
yeah.
you are fighting for oxygen literally every day with Duke and Carolina in your hood. Ryan Odom doesn't have that problem. He just needs to take care of UVA and make them competitive, and he'll have plenty of oxygen, and the attention will come to him. And oh, by the way, he'll revel in that attention, and because he's so engaging, that will compound itself.
Yeah, I think ACC Media Day just got a little bit more interesting with Will Wade coming this year. It is fascinating just to kind of see where the ACC has ended up after this coaching carousel. But It'd be interesting just to kind of see how these rosters kind of develop over the next couple of weeks. But David, appreciate you coming on as always. I got you on here only a couple of weeks after your last appearance, so we'll take a little bit of a break now with the transfer portal heating up.
So what you're telling me is you're giving your listeners a break from me.
Hey, they love having you on here, and I love having you on here. It's always great talking to you. So, be well, my friend, and we will talk later.
Sounds good, Preston. Thank you.
All right, thank you for listening to the Who's On podcast, part of the Sabre Podcast Network. We will be back next week with some more on this college basketball madness that's going on. We will see you then next week on the Who's On podcast.
On the field, winning comes from hard work, care, and preparation. I learned that that same hard work doesn't stop when we exit the arena. Your care is our commitment, and preparation is our promise. We tackle challenges head on and turn dreams into reality, which is why I'm excited to join the team at Alcova Mortgage, where we help you score the perfect home.